Dr. Show!
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 54. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. This week's episode features Skylar Totman, and Skylar Totman is a master trainer at Boot Camp for New Dads. Now, what is Boot Camp for New Dads? Let me backtrack a little bit. Let me go back. About 2 months before my daughter was born, so this was approximately August, late August, early September, I talked to one of my buddies and I said, you know, what was the best thing you did to get ready for the birth of your child? And he said, you got to go to Boot Camp for New Dads. Go to birthing class. Sure, you know, birthing class. You got to go to it. It's taught by a nice lady. You're there with your wife. You're there with other couples. And they talk about what delivery is like, all that, blah, blah, blah. So I go, okay, you know, birthing class, fine. And he said, the best thing that you should do is Boot Camp for New Dads. Now, what you do is you show up to this place with a bunch of other guys who are going to have their babies born soon. And these other guys show up and they have their babies. So these are the veteran dads. You'll hear us talk in this episode about rookie dads and about veteran dads. And the veteran dads show up and you interact with those babies and those dads for like 3 hours. Skylar will lead you. He will teach some things, you know, give you some concepts that you need to learn. We talk about gatekeeping in this episode. So we talk about that and, you know, some of the other things that are covered. But mostly it's you getting to talk with veteran dads, these guys who have their babies who are 3 months old, 4 months old, 5 months old. And you basically get to go, okay, so how do I do this? How do I support my wife? How do I be involved in this kid's life? How do we get through the first month? When can we have sex again? All of those types of questions come up and you're in a safe environment. As a guy, sometimes it can be a little bit intimidating talking to women because women get a lot more sort of support and they're prepped for motherhood. And guys, on the other hand, we're not real good at talking about these things with each other or seeking help for things that we don't always know. And Skylar has some theories about why fatherhood is in the place that it's in. And he thinks it's coming back around, but he talks about the origins in the Industrial Revolution. He talks about Leave It to Beaver era, you know, father knows best, dad goes to work, comes home, reads the paper for 2 hours, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, how do we get back to a better model of fatherhood, one that doesn't look like Homer Simpson? And that's sort of what this class does. It's not necessarily designed to enhance your knowledge. If you're getting ready to have a baby, you've probably read a lot, you know, to learn more about baby development and stuff like that. But you probably haven't done a lot to boost your confidence. And that's what Boot Camp for New Dads does. So it was the best thing that I did. And because I host this podcast, when I went back as a veteran dad, I said to Skylar, I'm like, dude, I got to have you on the show. And he does a great job. He mentions that he has the gift of confession. So we talk about how he got involved in Boot Camp for New Dads. And I find that very, very interesting. And I think you will too. So it's kind of an unconventional story, but it happens right near the front of this episode. And it's fantastic. So I cannot recommend Boot Camp for New Dads highly enough. And that makes this an episode that I'm especially proud of. First, let's make sure to thank our sponsor, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. They are your one-stop shop for all your online communications needs. Anything that you could possibly do online, they will help you do it better. Much better, in fact. They designed the John of All Trades podcast website. It's a gorgeous looking website. They help us with our SEO. If you Google search John of All Trades, we're up near the top. They've got us a great SEO package, and Zach and company have trained me on how to do that. They can do the same for you if you're running a business, if you're starting something new. They are the people to talk to because they understand online communications, grassroots coalition building, and all the technical support that you could possibly need to run your business and to promote your business and get your message out to as many people online as possible. They're the greatest. So the number 4, DEGRE.ES. I'm actually using them for another project coming up, and I'll probably announce that on the show in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. And what else can I tell you? Follow us on social media. Like our Facebook page. It's JOAT Pod. Follow us on Twitter. It's J-O-A-T pod. Two easy ways to stay up to date with John of All Trades. And then, as always, feel free to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search John of All Trades, J-O-N of All Trades dot U-S. Let's get to this week's episode. It's number 54 with Skylar Totman. He's an instructor at Boot Camp for New Dads. The greatest thing that you can do if you're getting ready to have a baby is take Boot Camp for New Dads. That's for all you male listeners. For all you female listeners, if you're getting ready to have a baby, tell your dude to get over there. So let's find out why. Here we go. Episode 54, Skylar Totman, and it begins now.
Oh, my son, he's at Corey Elementary.
Oh, okay.
He's in fifth grade down there. So that's where I have to, it's right in that area. So that's just a part of town I talk about.
Okay. So you're just going to pick him up then?
Yep.
Okay. Got anything going on today?
No, didn't have anything going on today. Fridays are kind of a calm day. It's, my family's a family of introverts. It's kind of funny. We've learned that we all come home and then we all go to our separate private spaces for a little while and sort of recover from the day.
So right. Decompress from being out.
There have been a number of times where my family's had Friday evening activities to go to some social event.
Right.
And all of us will look at, even this, we're talking of a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, my wife and I, we'll just look at each other going, no, let's find some reason to not go out tonight. We'll do something on Saturday nights, but Friday nights are recuperation time for our family. Yeah, so we talked about it this morning. We all said, oh, it's Friday. This is good. Yeah, we all kind of said, oh, this will be nice. We can all kind of recover from our weeks.
Oh, that's too funny. Way. I'm surprised to hear you say that, given that when I met you, you are standing up in front of basically, I don't know how many were in our class, like 12, leading a bunch of dudes, and you do that fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm. I do it about 5-6 times a month.
Wow.
Actually.
So, actually, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Sitting here with Skylar Totman, who is one of the instructors for Boot Camp for New Dads, which I attended both as a rookie dad and a veteran dad. So, welcome. Glad to have you on the show.
Glad to be here.
So, tell me a little bit about how you got involved. Well, actually, first of all, explain what Boot Camp for New Dads is. And can you give us a little bit of the history of what that is?
I can give you a little bit of the history. Boot Camp for New Dads started actually with a gentleman who, his name was Greg Bishop, and he just kept getting advice, or he kept getting requests for advice. He had about 4 or 5 kids. He had a number of friends in his neighborhood who all the moms kept sending their husbands to him when they were about to have their first child. Said, hey, talk to this guy about how to become a dad. So he began to...
So presumably he was a good dad.
He was a very good dad, yeah. And so he actually began it, and it began actually as a program in the Navy.
Really?
And now after about, I think about 25 years, something like that, it's expanded. It's in 43 states. It's international. Now they've done some training overseas on it, and it's quite a going concern now. Boot camp coaches have been interviewed, discussed, it's been on Oprah, it's been on various places, so it's pretty well known. And what's interesting about the program is there are a number of dad preparation, prenatal education programs is actually the technical term for it.
Okay.
But the good thing about Boot Camp for New Dads is it's what we call three-dimensional. You experienced, we have a class of, 12 guys, maybe at a certain hospital. I've had as many as 28 guys in a class.
Right. When I was a veteran dad, I think we had like 20,
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Yeah. And that's a very different environment than a class of, say, 4 or 5.
Right.
So we, we get a group of guys who are 12 guys, and they're all about 1 to 2 months to 2 weeks out from their due date. And say we have 12 guys, we'll try and have 3 guys who have their 4-month-olds with them. They come back as what you used the term, they're veteran dads. Their dads have been doing this for a little while. None of them are, very comfortable with that term veteran dad because they've only been, the baby's only been out of the womb for about 4 months for most of them.
Well, it feels unnatural. You show up. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because the guys will look at you like you actually know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you do to a certain extent. I mean, much more than they do.
Mm-hmm.
But you go, man, what do I know? Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't been doing this for very long. But
and anyway. So you spend the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
And a lot of times veteran dads walk out of there saying, I do know a lot. And I've learned an awful lot about what it means to be a dad in that first even 3-4 months of life.
Yeah. So. And so what are some of the things that are covered in that?
Well, it's amazing how much we talk about the relationship between mom and dad.
Yeah.
About how to build trust with mom, to bring her to an understanding that, you know, when the baby's with dad, the baby's good. That's what right. one of the things we really try to hone in on is making this whole parenthood thing a team effort, because moms are very concerned. They want everything to go well for their baby. And sometimes as a result, they tend to trust themselves a whole lot more
right.
than they trust dad, even to the point of distrusting dad. Now, there's a big difference between low trust in dad and distrust.
Okay.
Distrust is an assumption that you will harm me if you have the chance. And that, if you get a mom who distrusts dad, you've got a very difficult relationship. And yet, that is an instinctive and protective thing to do.
Well, I think it's probably an extension of, you know, mom has been caring for this baby already for 9 months, 10 months, you know, 40 weeks, and you come out, and to suddenly relinquish some of that control, it's got to be very tough to do.
Yeah, a buddy of mine in his coaching asks the dads in his class, if you worked on a car for 9 months solid in the garage and you finally got it perfect.
Yeah.
The color's right, the engine runs right, the mixture is good, the carburetor is smooth. And then the moment you open up the garage door, mom wants to take it for a spin.
Right.
That's an awful lot like what it is to hand a baby over to even a caring dad.
Yeah.
So building that trust, it's amazing how many times it comes around to communicating with mom, developing a teamwork relationship with mom, and beginning a new life as three people working together well,
right.
versus a mom and a baby, and then dad kind of watching and hoping that, you know, he gets to be involved and trying to see.
Or fear that, you know, there are some dads, and you highlight this in your training, and I thought this was pretty powerful, because you see this sometimes in your peer group, where dad doesn't want to disrupt his life that much,
mm-hmm.
and is content if mom is willing to just sort of take the lead and take all, you know, do pretty much everything there is, and dad goes, okay, well, I guess I'll go to the gym or continue watching football or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the way I put it is sometimes when the opportunity arises, is that's the dad who asks themselves, how little can this baby inconvenience me?
Yeah.
And how much can my life after the baby comes be like my life before?
Right.
And that might work out well, like you're alluding to. That might work out well for 3 days, maybe.
Right.
But then once mom is doing all this work and she's changing all the diapers and she's dealing with the baby all the time and feeding the baby all the time, which is what moms do in that first few months.
Yeah.
A lot of resentments gets built up pretty quickly. And one of the questions I've learned to ask dads is, how long is it going to be before she really resents you
yeah.
allowing her to do this? It was her who started it, but if you allow it, how much damage are you doing? So, and it's interesting. I've also taken asking guys in the class, I'm like, have you seen this happen in other families? And invariably, I get several of the guys saying, oh, my brother, oh, my cousin, yeah. oh, my sister. And then you ask them, how's that family doing now? And they get this troubled look in their eye, like
yeah.
They're alive, they're working, and they're not headed toward the rocks, but there's no joy.
Yeah.
Or there's little joy there.
Yeah, it's just sort of a grim march through life.
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah. And so it's got to be rewarding and a little bit strange to see that light go on in these guys when mm-hmm. you're doing this. Because how long have you done this now?
I've done it about 7 years now.
And how did you get involved?
Well, candidly, I got involved because I didn't take the class myself.
Okay.
I had been an uncle about 7 or 8 times over when our daughter came along, and I looked at Boot Camp for New Dads. I walked past the classroom
sure.
at St. Joseph's here in Denver, and I felt uncomfortable about it. I had received all kinds of advice. I've actually written an article on this. Received all kinds of advice
Is
already.
That on the web?
It's available.
Okay.
It's not on the web, but it's around.
Okay. I'd love to link to it in the companion blog piece to this.
I'll see what I can do. It's actually now property of Boot Camp for New Dads.
Okay.
So I'll see what we can do.
Well, I just like to link to it
mm-hmm.
wherever we can, if we can.
But. Yeah. And it basically talks about why I passed on Boot Camp for New Dads. That's the, That's the article. And I said, nah, I don't need to go to that. I've been an uncle a bunch of times over. I've changed a few diapers.
I get it.
Good. Whatever. Yeah. But deep down, I realized as I look back that I didn't want to come face to face with what I didn't know. And for a guy, coming face to face with what you need to learn is not a comfortable experience. We like to say, I got under control. I've got it all taken care of. So, and I'm hearing this from other dads too who take the class. It's interesting. A lot of guys are very stressed before they come to the, class. They are concerned. What is it going to be like? And I'm starting to figure out ways to ease that stress at or before the class. Anyway, so I turned it down. And then I proceeded to go through the first 4 or 5 months of my child's life. And it was awful.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of the things that happened with me is I'd experienced my third layoff. And we had come to the conclusion that my wife's job was much more stable than mine. So
what were you doing?
Well, I was in high tech. I was at the time I was what's called a resource manager for an SAP company. And I managed about 40 SAP billable consultants, but I was not billable myself. And when you go through an economic downturn, it's always the question is, are you bringing money in or are you sending money out?
Or are you a cost center? Yeah.
Yeah. So I, my wife and I looked at each other and said, you know, her job is she's a school teacher, very stable. She's extraordinary at what she does. And we, especially she, made the difficult decision to say, how about you stay home and I go to work? And, that was hard for me on an identity level. I didn't, want to be a provider, want to take care of my family.
Yeah.
But it was extremely hard on my wife who wanted to be a provider.
Sure.
And she wanted to be home with her kids. She'd always look forward to that. So it was extremely noble for her to set her jaw and say, I'll be the breadwinner.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm at home, struggling with the identity of being a parent at home and not at ease with how that made me feel. So, and what happens, and it's one of the things we talk about a lot in boot camp, is the how you feel about yourself affects how you are with the baby.
Yeah.
And I was not feeling very good about myself. And again, as you've been in the class, we talk a lot about the tendency to maybe want to harm a baby.
Right.
Shaken babies, 74% of all shaken babies happen at the hands of their fathers or some male father figure like a boyfriend or someone like that who's supposed to be responsible and a good for the parent. Professionals don't shake babies so much. They don't have the same emotional attachment. But as a dad at home, not feeling too good about myself, and these babies not necessarily, or when my son came along 2 years later, not stopping crying, not doing what I want.
Were your babies colicky?
My daughter was, she cried a little bit more than on average, but no, they weren't colicky.
Okay.
But they did. There's another term they're coming out with now for a baby that cries more than 3 hours a day in general. But
that described your kids more than 3 hours a day?
My daughter was a little grouchy. I would not actually call her colicky. She did cry. She did, but she's a baby and babies cry.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel very good about myself already, and I came very close. And I'm candid in the classes, like I think you heard me say.
Yeah.
I came close to shaking them, very close. The only thing that kept me from shaking one of my kids was I'd seen one commercial or heard one radio commercial saying, don't shake your baby. And I didn't want to be the guy they wrote about those commercials about. That was actually the main reason I didn't shake my baby. It wasn't a care for the baby. It was, I don't want to be that guy that commercials are made about.
Yeah.
So coming through that, and it was a difficult couple of years for me. I felt very isolated. People say, oh, you're a great dad. Because out in public, I'd have a ball with them. I'd do all kinds of fun things with them. And everyone, oh, you're a great dad.
Yeah, everyone's different when they're in public, though.
Right. And I would look back, and I'd never say it to them, but I'd say, I'm a monster. It was very much a double life for me for a couple, 2-3 years. And only later, after my kids were 4 or 5 years old, did I start saying, maybe I'm not the only monster out there. So I began to say, what would it be like to help prepare other dads to become at-home dads or fathers and deal with this? And at that point, I began doing some research into what it was like to come up with a fatherhood class. And at that point, somebody mentioned Boot Camp to New Dads to me, and it all came flooding back to me. That was a class that I passed on before I became a dad. So I met with the regional coordinator, the national coordinator here in Denver, and went to a couple of classes, and he looked at me kind of strange. He said, we've never trained a coach who didn't actually take the class as a before coming, but you're awfully earnest about this. And I was, and I still am. And now I end up, I'm doing it, and it's not a full-time job by any means, but I'm busy with it now. So that was how it started for me. And I talk a little with people in other arenas about gifts, things we're just naturally good at.
Yeah.
And, you know, gift of music, gift of, you know, speaking, whatever. And I have to admit that I have a gift of confession. Hmm. I stand in front of a group of guys on a regular basis and say, I came close to doing something I'm here to help you not do.
Yeah.
So it's an important work to say, this is how I'm human, and have that help other people.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful because you touch on that in the class, and that comes near the end, and it's a very sort of stark part of the class where, you know, everyone goes around and asserts that they will never shake a baby. And I mean, you touched on your own history. You said, you know, I've come close and, you know, I've squeezed a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's hard not to. Like I remember my baby, I was trying to swaddle her and I go, God, just stay still. And I'm just, you know, I'm hugging her probably, you know, I would say 20% more than I should have. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, you go, what am I doing? And you let go. But I never would have guessed the extent and the story to what you just told me. Mm-hmm. And it's very powerful, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you. And when I took this class, I mean, you do a lot of prep before you have a baby. You know, it's a lot like getting ready to launch a space shuttle.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go through the birth class, and the birth class is fine. And it's sort of exactly like you picture it. I had a friend tell me about this because he went through it and he said, it's great. You should go do it. You should check it out. And I go, okay, you know, I'll give it a shot. And I had felt pretty good beforehand, but I felt amazing afterward.
Mm.
You know, I'm like, okay, yeah, like I'm ready to go. And in our class, we had one baby and then a second baby showed up later. And the thing that's amazing is I noticed this when I was a veteran dad. You see these guys, many of whom have never even held a baby once in their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch them do that is funny because everyone is so stiff. And mm-hmm. even just 3 or 4 months of holding my baby, I'll hold a baby any position now.
Yeah.
And I'll hold anyone's baby. But what is it like watching them at the beginning of the class versus the end of the class?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a couple of hospitals where I have the vantage to watch them walk in the building.
Right. Yeah, and that was ours.
Yeah, and I can tell. I watch them walk in. I stand. There's a railing. The class is in a couple of the hospitals. There's a railing above the entrance, and you watch them walk into the atrium. And I know the guys who are coming to my class with 2 steps inside the door.
Because, just by sight?
Oh, yeah, because they're walking slow. They're not blinking, and they're holding a piece of paper that has the directions of the class on it.
Right, because directions to a hospital are impossible.
Yeah, but they're holding these directions out in front of them as if they are a shield. It's like this piece of paper is some source of protection.
Right.
The other thing they've got usually is a cup of coffee or a water bottle, and both of them are held out in front of them, not in a comfortable place. They're actually held out in front of them as if this might protect me from what I'm walking myself into.
Like very awkwardly, almost like ski poles?
Almost like ski poles. Very, very much like that. And they're walking slowly, and they're kind of looking, they're swiveling their heads slowly, and I just yell down at them. I'm like, you're with me! And they're like, and they kind of get a relief at that point. They're like, oh, okay. And so they come on up and
they go, oh, it's a dude. Like, it's a normal looking dude.
And I'm safe. He doesn't sound threatening.
Right.
But I can tell. So they walk in slowly, and a fair number of them know that there are going to be babies in the class. But right. A decent amount of time, there are guys who walk in and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to sit in this 3-hour class. We're going to talk about fatherhood. And then somebody rolls in with a baby and a stroller, and that's when they get quiet and they sort of look over like, there's a real one there.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we have guys, and it probably happened in your class too, we'll go around the circle, have them talk about, you know, questions they have, things like that. And they'll say, I've never held a baby before. And immediately somebody else will say, okay, here we go, and just bring it over and give them a baby. And they'll sort of look, and then about 10 seconds into that, they'll start to relax, their shoulders will drop a little bit, and they'll say, it didn't die. I didn't break it.
Yeah.
And by the end, so your experience is a lot like a lot of guys. I've had guys, one of the interesting factors, guys are a little afraid of their own strength when it comes to a baby. They're concerned innately about harming a baby. And on many of occasions, I will find that they won't use their thumbs. They will hold a baby.
Yeah.
They won't use their fingers or their thumbs. They'll try to hold the baby entirely with their wrists and their arms because they're afraid of wrapping their fingers around the baby. And it's one of the things I've learned, that you demonstrate how to hold a baby before you make someone do it. And you're absolutely right. They go stiff. They're extremely rigid sometimes. I had a guy hyperventilate. He almost...
Wow.
He didn't quite pass out, but he didn't blink. He started to hyperventilate and took the baby away from him and said, okay, we're going to get ready. He's like, I don't think I should be doing this. And we're like, you should be doing this. And we're going to
You definitely you a- should be doing
this. We're going to give you a minute, and you're going to be right back at it. He came back as a veteran dad, and to see him comfortable with his own child was a joy. And it is, because I get the privilege of seeing the transformation, not just between the beginning of the class and the end, but when these guys come back as veteran dads. I'll tell you a couple of stories. One, I had a guy come in, and I listened to their questions at the beginning of the class. And if a guy is about 3 months out from his due date, he's got a certain kind of question. Usually it's more academic, finance related. Oh, you know, how do you pay for daycare? How do you do with it? The guys who come in and they're 2 weeks out of away from their due date, they're asking much more intimate personal questions. How do I take care of mom? What do I do about, you know, there's more stress in their voice, regardless of the question. They're like, okay, I've got to do this. How am I going to provide? And
they're just fraught with a little more tension, right?
Right. It's more real to them. Maybe they're watching the baby kick a lot more and that kind of thing. Well, this guy walked in from straight from work. He had a business suit on and a tall guy. And he just asked a question about finances. His due date was like 8 days away.
Wow.
Yeah. I usually tell guys to keep their cell phones on. I've had a couple of guys leave partway through class. So, okay, I have to go now. My wife's on the way to the hospital. Anyway, this guy showed up, and he was just very cool on the whole parenthood thing. He was very academic, very rational about it. And I just took a mental note of it. It's okay. He's 8 days out from due. I was a little surprised that his disposition was what it was.
Just very sort of like almost antiseptic about it?
Yeah, and it's a good word for it. And partway through the class, he said, yeah, my wife and I were both lawyers. We're both type A personalities. We're both driven. I came from the office tonight, so it's a night class. And we both were just wondering how did he put it, how this baby is going to be a part of our life, how we're going to bring our baby into this life, into our life. And the way he said it kind of sounded like, you know, he was looking at getting raised lettering on the side of his new tires or something. And so I just took a little note of this. Okay, well, you know, and there's things you say, but, you know, I've experienced a lot of different adventures in this class. So watched him and, you know, went through the class. He was honest, good guy. And he headed out. Well, about 6 months later, I'm doing another class, same hospital. And my three or four veteran dads file in, and one of the guys showing up was, you know, he's in a t-shirt, kind of rumpled up, had sweatpants on. He's got a chair that he can sit in with the other veteran dads, but this guy just immediately sat on the floor with his baby, had his little blanket spread out. He's sitting cross-legged.
Yeah.
And about 20 minutes into the class, I'm like, this is the same guy. And his hair's all rumpled up, and like I say, and it got around to daycare, and this was an interesting thing, and you could tell he was a trial lawyer by how he responded to this. Guys asked, oh, how do you choose a daycare? And the other three veteran dads there with their babies, they all took a shot at it. Oh, you know, my wife's staying home, we've got a nanny, all these answers. And he waited for all of them to finish.
Yeah, the typical garden variety.
Yeah, and then it comes around to him. He says, yeah, we put a lot of effort into our daycare choices. Interviewed them, got references. We went and toured the facility. And as a service to my wife, one of the things that I did was I told her that I would bring the baby to the daycare the day of the first day so that it would be an ease on her mind.
Uh-huh.
And so I did. I got the diaper bag packed. I got everything all set. Took the baby over to the daycare for the first time. Sat in the parking lot for 45 minutes, bawled my eyes out, drove home, and I resigned. I'm at home with my child now. There were 28 guys in that room, and you could have heard a pin drop.
Wow.
And he just said, yeah, I resigned. I'm at home with my baby now. And that, you know, there was a small part of me said, you know, if I were going for effect, I should just end the class there. It's all downhill from
just
that.
Drop the mic and leave.
But you could tell he set that up and he just said, yeah, I resigned. And that was the kind of transition I get the joy of watching. I won't say I'm an advocate necessarily. Oh, he chose the right thing to do.
Right.
But he chose the good thing to do. And he chose the thing that was best for his family at great personal sacrifice. And that was one of the transition stories that I saw. Another one I'll tell you, I had a guy show up, 72 probably.
Years old?
Yeah. Yeah. 72-year-old guy. And we're all looking at him going, way to go, buddy. Yeah, first child. And he told us the whole story. He says, yeah, my son was with a woman, got her pregnant.
Oh.
And my son decided he didn't want to have anything to do with the baby.
Okay.
He actually moved a state away. He did not want to be here. We said, wait a second, this is our grandchild.
Yeah.
But he didn't want anything to do with the baby, so he left. So we are realizing we want to be a part of this child's life. So we've done a couple of things. We moved mom closer to us so we could be there close to the baby. And now I'm back to learn what it means to be a dad in a more modern sense. So here's this 72-year-old guy.
Wow.
Hanging out, learning how to change diapers and stuff again, and saying, this is much different than when I was a dad. And it is. Culturally, we're in a very different place with fatherhood.
Certainly.
And then he participated, and then sure enough, about 5 months later, he comes back.
Wow.
And he's sitting on the floor playing with his grandchild, being a granddad, and telling these guys how to change diapers and things like that. And so I get a chance to witness those kind of stories, and I could go on for days about those kind of stories. And just watching him sacrifice. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you one more.
Okay.
I throw out a theory at one class, and occasionally I tell this story. I have a theory about the transition to fatherhood. I say, you know, there are two transitions that I say might come close to the transition to fatherhood. I have not experienced either of these transitions, so I can only guess. It's not, you know, getting your first car, graduating, or getting laid, or anything like that. I said the two transitions I can think of that have the magnitude of becoming a father, or one, military service.
Okay.
I'd not been in the military, but, you know, you look at the boot camp, the experiences you face there, they shave your head, you're living in a barracks, maybe a move to a foreign country, maybe experience combat. That's a very different life before to after.
Yes.
Yes. And so I said, you know, that kind of transition might be similar to what it means to become a dad.
Hmm.
So, theoretically, like I said, I've never experienced it. And I threw out the other transition. I said, you know, another transition I can think of is losing a limb.
Mm.
You lose an arm, you lose a leg, and your house changes, your pace of life changes, how you move through your day changes. It just makes a big difference in who you are and how you live. And I threw this theory out in this specific setting with a purpose. And the veteran dad who was there kind of waited patiently for me to be done with my theory. And he said, yeah, Skyler, he makes a good point. But becoming a dad is bigger than either of those transitions.
Wow.
And he knew wherever he spoke. He'd lost his leg in Desert Storm.
Oh, my God.
And he just sort of sat there and he says, I know for a fact that becoming a dad is bigger than either one of those.
Wow.
And a big, burly guy, like 6'4", and he's holding on to his daughter.
Yeah.
And he had a titanium leg. I remember him coming down the steps and not wanting help to get down with his crutches and his daughter's car seat.
And just saying,
it's bigger than either of those. And it was terribly profound to hear him say that to these guys. So, yeah. And I get a privilege of participating in that kind of transformation.
No joke.
That kind of story on a regular basis.
I loved coming back as a veteran dad just because it's almost like you get to visit yourself in the past.
True.
Yeah. And you do it over and over again. It's my favorite moment being a rookie dad was the veteran dad lays his son down on the mat and says, all right, he's due for a diaper change. Who's up? And you watch everyone avert their gaze.
Yeah.
Everyone looks away. Yeah. Just, you know, like, I don't know what he's talking about. Did he say something? I didn't hear anything.
Oh my God. Check my text messages.
And then someone can't take the silence and steps up and does it. Mm-hmm. I got to do that. And I looked around the circle and no one was looking at me. It was mm-hmm. fantastic. Mm-hmm. My question is, I had some people say, you're actually bringing your daughter to be held by a bunch of strangers, like for 3 hours. I said, yeah. And I think the reason they're surprised by that is the fear of, you know, a bunch of guys who don't know what they're doing, dropping your kid or doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. Has anything like that happened in a class?
It has never happened. And one of the things that, I've been in that circumstance too.
Yeah.
And I kind of calmly look back and say, if this were a group of 12 women,
right,
would that concern still exist?
Oh, that's funny. It's like a reverse sort of, mm-hmm. oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've thrown that out a few times and just said, if this were women, would you be worried?
Right.
And, no, it has never happened. They're all very careful. They're very safe. And we take a lot of steps.
Yeah.
There was one case that came kind of close, and that's when we let a guy – when guys say they're having twins, a lot of times the veteran dads will place twins or two babies in their lap just so they can say, okay, you got a feel for this.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy holding on to these twins, they were on his own, and they were probably about 4 months old. He started to pick them up and carry them, and he didn't have them in a good position.
Mm.
And the veteran dad who belonged to one of the kids just immediately, instinctively came in. And his wiring was as strong as any woman's that I would know,
yeah.
any mom's. And he was just as ready to take care of his baby
right.
and on his toes. And it's
just out of nowhere, like Batman. Right,
right. He was like, it's an instinct, and you know, we could talk about brain chemistry and all that stuff about what brings us to that level of protection, but he was ready, and he was on it in two steps when this guy didn't have the right hold.
Yeah.
And he was ready, and there was never any danger, but he was ready regardless.
Right, yeah.
But I don't know. You'll see this, and I imagine you experience it as a dad yourself. Anymore, you walk into a room, and you start looking for all the things that your baby might be able to get a hold of, like that they could choke on. You look an open outlet cover that they could stick their finger in. I remember when I was... My daughter was 3 years old going over to somebody's house. She said, oh, yeah, I've got my nephews over here all the time. We're childproofed.
Uh-huh.
I walk in the house, and I immediately start looking at all the hanging electrical cords. I saw a cord go from an outlet, droop down, go right up to a lamp, and I'm like, can't let her near that. And then I walk in the kitchen, and I see another cord drooping down from the outlet down and then up to a crock pot filled with nacho cheese dip.
Oh, good.
And I'm just looking around going, my child will never get out of my grasp in this house.
Yeah.
There was another one where they had a runner hanging down off of a coffee table. And all she had to do was just pull on that runner, and she was going to get a massive vase right on her head. And that kind of instinct, that protective instinct, is as alive and well in men as it is in women.
Oh, yeah.
Especially once we allow ourselves to tap into it.
Well, and I think a lot of men are fearful that they don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why media, a history of, who knows? I mean, one of the questions you ask us is, when you think of a dad in terms of TV, who's the first person that comes to mind? Mm-hmm. And the answer is Homer Simpson. Just the bumbling fool who... through ignorance or apathy or just boorishness is barely functional in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you fear that is reflected in yourself. But it's really funny because the first time I had my daughter out, I was helping a buddy with a manuscript, and we just met like in this pub. And so I had the car seat just in the booth next to me. And I had to like make a bottle, or I don't remember what I was doing, but I go, you want to hold her for a second? He goes, what if I drop her? And I go, dude, you're sitting in a booth, like, and the table's right there. If you drop her, she's literally going to fall 1 inch, and that's going to be it. And P.S., you're not going to drop her.
By the way.
And by the way, you're playing with live ammo here. You're not going to drop her. You're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. That assumption of incompetence has been, it's taken decades to ingrain that in us.
Yeah. And what do you attribute that to?
Oh, quite a few things. In the class, we talk about how, actually, I trace it back to the Industrial Revolution, quite frankly.
Okay.
That developed a division of labor in the workplace and between the home and the workplace. Mm. It really came to a time where dads became the competent moneymaker and moms became the domestic engineer, the competent in the home, homemaker. And that was really a factor of that level of prosperity. And one of the things that I remind guys is if you go back to the ancient civilizations, the Aztecs, the Mayans, the Vikings, the tribal areas, the more agrarian areas, and even the United States when it was moving in across, you see, number one, you see much smaller houses. You see two-bedroom houses or two-room houses at most, usually one room. And the whole co-sleeping thing was not a factor because it was one bed for everybody.
Right.
And you see a much smaller living arrangement, and you see a father who is in the field, and chances are the son or daughter is with them at 10 or 12. One of the suggestions I give guys is if you want to see a better icon of fatherhood, go back and read Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's a father who's not a slouch, as a dad, as a man.
Yeah.
Hangs his gun over the door. He builds his house like a fort. But he's right there on the floor wrestling with the kids, scaring them, playing with them, teaching them. And he's in their midst. And that is more the icon of fatherhood that has gone down through history. We're coming out of this anomaly that it was at its height in the 50s. And they're in the, like, the Leave It to Beaver days.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, when Dad gets home after he's sat there with his newspaper for 2 hours and had his martini.
Right.
Then he'll discipline you. And, yeah, we really got into that and got away from the instinctive fatherhood initiative. And what happened was because of the prosperity that dads were able to bring in with all the money they could make in this new technologically driven society.
Yeah.
So, well, it made us a lot of money and we got a great big house. Prosperity became a pleasant, shiny substitute for intimacy.
Yeah.
And, as a result, one of the things, and you know, you see it in the Native American tribes where the men would go off on these hunting trips, the hunter-gatherer. They might be gone for 3 or 4 days looking for game. And the females were the ones working the corn and things like that. So there is that male alone, and that's just as, oh, Jung would have a lot to say about that as far as our archetypal who we are. We're also wired to be parents, and we're getting that wiring back. And we talk about that in the class, how moms hold their babies on average in one way facing them, and dads hold their babies in 9 different ways, including one of the questions, and you probably heard me ask this, was, you know, how many of you seen a mom with a baby on her shoulders? And most of the guys say no. And the dads are, oh, yeah, we see dads all the time. And I ask them, are you looking forward to having your baby on your shoulder? And they're all like, oh, yeah. And that's how we're wired differently. And it's a joy, it's a gift to have the opportunity to kind of reawaken that instinctive wiring and saying, go with that. And once you look at the development, I introduced a little bit about the baby's brain development in that first year and how it skyrockets. And one of the things I asked the guys is, if you let mom get away with what we call gatekeeping, where she sort of takes care of every need the baby has and kind of gets between you and the baby, and you're not holding that baby in all those different ways, you're not playing with the baby, you're not stimulating the baby, that first year of growth in their brain, how much are they missing out on if mom gets away with this low trust in dad? And if dad lets her get away with it, how much does the baby lose? So, yeah, it's a powerful thing to reawaken or to factually and confidently introduce guys to their instinctive wiring as parents.
You know, I'm glad you brought up gatekeeping because it brings up an issue that you also highlight in class, which is bringing up these issues with your partner beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier. So, you know, you always ask, how many of you guys are going to get grilled on this? How many are you going to get a pop quiz?
When you learn from the class, yeah.
Yeah. And it's nice because it gives you a vehicle to or almost like it's an entree to talk about some of the things that you might have been worried about, but otherwise didn't know how to bring up.
Right.
And so we you know, I brought up gatekeeping with my wife, and later afterward, she said, "Am I gatekeeping you?" when she was doing something. And so and she wasn't really, I don't even think, but the fact that we were able to have that type of conversation is much different, and it's much more productive and healthy than if you're bringing this up for the first time after the baby's born.
And after she does it. I don't recall.
Right.
But I always ask the guys, I'm like, okay, if you have this conversation with mom now and bring up gatekeeping, how did she take it when you as the veteran?
Yeah,
So, oh, yeah, it wasn't a bad one. And then I ask the guys in the class, what would it be like if you waited for her to do this, to take the baby away from you?
Yeah.
And, you know, when the baby needs a diaper change, and for you to say, oh, that's gatekeeping, you know, what you just did to me. That conversation's not going to go well. So yeah. You're absolutely right. To step back a little bit, my actual education and training and experience is in something I call proactive conflict management. How do you prepare people to go into interdependent relationships where they're ready for the conflict they're going to experience,
right?
Versus managing it after it happens. And I work with in various arenas where there, once you get into conflict, some damage has already been done.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating to me to see how much conflict we can manage, not necessarily avoid, but manage just by talking about it early. And if I can help a bunch of guys come alongside mom, and one of the other big ones that we address is breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And how moms can be very hard on themselves in breastfeeding, and dads can instinctively come in with this expectation setting that says, you know, why isn't this working? What should you do differently? And how that can be really harmful to a mom.
Yeah.
So just
because moms will beat themselves up even if breastfeeding goes well.
Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't go well, and for 10 minutes before it does in a given day, they'll be hard on themselves. And we as men are instinctive problem solvers. We want to fix things, so we ask the wrong questions. So if you can just prepare two people to say, okay, how can we come alongside each other instead of come at each other?
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. The prepping them for that conversation, which they will have after the class, is another thing. And it took me a couple of years before I started doing that.
Yeah.
Started saying, okay, you're going to get interviewed when you get home? And they're like, oh, I am.
Oh, I so am. Yeah, and good, bad, or indifferent, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's curiosity about it.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of times, and the veteran dads, I'll go around and say, she will meet you in the driveway. she wants to know. She'll probably text you partway through this meeting to ask you what you're talking about. And so helping them ready and helping them blame the class, say, hey, you know, Skylar freaked out about this. The veteran dads didn't think it was a big deal, but there's something called gatekeeping.
Yeah.
And you might have heard it. There are ways to bring these topics up. That could, you know, one of the things I tell guys is like, okay, when you bring up gatekeeping with mom and how she might instinctively trust herself more than you and get between you and the baby, you know, I say, you know, when you bring this up with her, don't say, hey, apparently you're going to want to take this baby away from me all the time. Say, hey, apparently I've got to earn your trust because you're going to instinctively trust yourself more than me, and I'm ready to earn that trust. That's a whole lot better place, way to get to point B than to go at it in a combative way. And even giving them the wording for how to say to bring these topics up is it's easy to do. May as well do it right. So, yeah, but you're going back to what you said, just giving the family a name for the behavior.
Yeah.
Just say, oh, is that gatekeeping? Giving her a name for her behavior is able to say, oh, that eases us all out. Our expectations are lower. We're like, oh, I'm just doing something kind of typical. And we do that with baby blues, too, and also postpartum depression when we talk about that. Just by giving them a name for what's happening. And think about this. When my mother was growing up, the word postpartum depression didn't exist.
Yeah, as a term that is relatively recent.
Yeah, and so you had all these women experiencing it, but they weren't able to name it, and as a result, they weren't able to connect around it.
Yeah.
And I speak with very personal experience of a mother who dealt with postpartum depression all of my life, but was not able to put a finger on it.
Mm.
And the massive, frankly, trauma that my childhood wasn't, but I'm not talking about me, I'm talking about the difficulty my mother faced, because
mm-hmm.
she could never get out of it. And it's so nice to provide guys a way to say, okay, let's bring this up in such a way that you know it's not just you, you have a word for it, and you know that there are ways to respond to it and you're not alone.
Yeah.
Tremendous help to be able to do that for them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So we're running out of time, and I want to ask three sort of almost rapid-fire questions.
Sure.
What is the most frequently asked question by dads at the boot camp for new dads? If you can narrow it down to one or maybe a couple.
How do I not kill the baby?
Okay. Just sort of in a broad way.
Yeah, it's followed up by what do we do about daycare?
Okay. I was going to guess how soon till we can have sex again.
Mm-hmm.
Does that come up a lot?
It takes a kind of a bold guy to say, I want to have sex again with mom. But I get it about once every couple of months.
Really?
Where
that's
the guys
it?
Say, they all think it. But right. They're looking at a group of guys going, do I want to be the only horny one in here?
Right.
And one of the things,
we're
too,
in here talking about dadhood, and I'm talking about, you know,
doing
the hibbity-dibbity with my wife.
I want to get back to that. Now, one of the things that I tell dads, and maybe the reason it doesn't come up so much, is because men experience a 33% drop in testosterone.
Right.
And that's, they say it happens right at birth. Well, I think it happens a little bit before birth. But they're... the sex drive is not that strong in guys. It comes back after about 6 months, but you're going to go through a time where you're like, that's not that big a deal to me either.
Gotcha. Second question is, what is the biggest misconception about dads that exists that you'd like to dispel?
That we have anything less than a pivotal impact on our child. You look at the impact, the research is just overwhelming as far as how much a caring father impacts his son and his daughter. The research is actually really strong around daughters. Vanderbilt University completed a study where they determined that the daughters of involved and invested fathers enter puberty up to 2 years later than the fathers of absent, or the
wow.
daughters of absent fathers. And one of the theories that they suggested, which is not the strongest, they traced it back to pheromones. They said that maybe if this daughter's not experiencing the affection from her father, she begins to develop her body to receive it from other men.
Oh, wow.
And that is scary. So giving that these dads, to send them out knowing just how crucial their impact is on the health in all the ways, physical, psychological, neurological, mental health on their babies, anything less than pivotal.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And then the third one is, what is, if you can distill it down to the number one tip for a guy getting ready to be a dad for the first time, what is the biggest thing that he should know going into it?
Biggest thing that he should know? Well, of course, to plug the boot camp for new dads, he needs to go.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't go. I now coach the class. That should tell you something. he can do it. He must do it. He should do it. Be an involved dad. It is, masculinity is about excellent fatherhood. It used to be that masculinity was a soul thing, a solitary thing, the rugged individual, the Marlboro man.
Yeah.
Watch the Super Bowl commercials. Watch the culture. You're a man. You're a better man if you're a better father.
That's good. I like that. You worked. I mean, you segued perfectly here. You have a black belt in segues. And so if people want to sign up for the boot camp for new dads, if people want to get involved in the Denver area, because we're doing this in my basement in Park Hill. Mm-hmm. And I did it at, I think my rookie dad class was at Press St. Luke. Mm-hmm. And I was a veteran dad at St. Joe's, but they're kind of all over the place, right?
All over the place, yeah. They're at here in Denver. They're at Sky Ridge, Swedish, Presbyterian St. Luke's, St. Joseph, Medical Center of Aurora, Littleton Adventist, Parker Adventist.
Wow.
It's hard to find a hospital that doesn't have them here.
Okay, good.
Nationally, the website bcnd.org, bootcampfornewdads.org.
bcnd.org?
Yeah, it gives a good, solid listing of sites that are where it's provided around the country. Also, any hospital should have it as a registration where you can sign up for it as part of, just like you sign up for the breastfeeding classes. If you don't have it at that hospital, find it. It's, I always tell guys who are ambivalent about going, I made one decision and I regretted it immensely. Don't make that same mistake.
Yeah, I could not agree more. This was the best thing that I did preparing for the birth of my child. And my buddy who pointed me to it said the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so I could not encourage it more. I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed taking the class with you. I thought you did just a great job.
Thank you.
And made everyone in there feel much more confident. And the thing that was so cool was you show up as a veteran dad and you go, am I really helpful here? And then you ask, was it helpful having these veteran dads here? And all the guys go, oh God, yeah, yeah, oh yeah. And you go, okay, good.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, it's nice to be able to just, especially if veteran dads show up a little bit early, I just sort of let them start the conversation now.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little bit of a change from before to put them more at the center, because it really is. And one of the things we say at boot camp is it's not so much about knowledge. It's about bringing about confidence. It's about building guys' confidence that say, okay, I think I can do this. And I think we do a great job of that.
I think you do too. I mean, all the knowledge in the world already exists. Mm-hmm. Getting some at-bats, just holding a baby and talking to guys who've been there, enormously helpful. So if people want to find you, where can they find you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'll go ahead and spell my name. It's S-C-H-U-Y-L-E-R.
Man, that is quite the spelling of Skyler.
That is quite the cool spelling. It's actually the original centuries-old way to spell it. Last name's Totman, T-O-T-M-A-N. I'm also on Facebook. And if you look up, I'm on Amazon as well. I've recently published a book called Ironies Leaders Navigate. And so I'm located there as well. You'll find that in a variety of sites.
You know what? We may have to have you back, talk about that another time.
That'd be great.
But until then, thanks for taking the time, and thanks for everything you do, Skyler. This is fantastic.
John, I really, really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk about Boot Camp for New Dads and see you being a dad in your own home. It's fantastic
This is fun, Skyler. Thanks for being here.
All right.
That wraps up episode 54 of the John of All Trades podcast with Skyler Totman, instructor at Boot Camp for New Dads. Just a great guy. Gift of confession indeed. I mean, those were some pretty intense stories that he told about his intro into how he got involved with Boot Camp for New Dads. So much appreciated to him for being willing to share that with us and share it with all the dads who come through the Boot Camp for New Dads class. If you have the privilege of attending with Skyler, you're going to walk away much better prepared to have your baby than if you didn't. So find Skyler on LinkedIn, find Skyler on Facebook. He pretty much friends everyone. He's got a huge friends list, and he posts some interesting stuff about leadership, about conflict management. He does all sorts of good stuff online, which only supplements what he does in front of a group of new dads 5 or 6 times a month. So bcnd.com is where you can find Boot Camp for New Dads. All great stuff. So on that note, I'm going to go tend to my daughter. She's been asleep in her room in her car seat. We went for a walk. She passed out, and I go, you know what? I'm not going to wake her up. Because why would I do that? The baby's asleep. Gives me time to go do this intro and talk to you folks. So I'm going to go do that. And then I'm recording this on a Sunday. We got people coming over. It's WrestleMania, baby. It's time to watch some wrestling. We got the taco bar going. We're going to have beers. It's going to be great. Next week, we have a fresh episode. I preview it on Monday. Check it out on Facebook and Twitter, JOAT Pod. And in the meantime, say goodnight, Gracie.